Welcome to the Catholic Dad Show. My name is Chris, and we are here as part of our four-part series, Doug on Tap. And so I'm here joined by the one and only Doug Johnson. Doug, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, good. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Doug Johnson?
Oh, well, I guess most people know me as the guy that's married to Abby Johnson, pro-life leader, speaker, entrepreneur, doer of all things, political head, all that good stuff. But actually, I'm just the regular old stay-at-home dad with eight kiddos, living a great life and being extra Catholic as often as I can.
So I've gotten to know you a couple of times. We both have big families.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the high score currently, but
yes.
We both have big families. We both drive ridiculous big vehicles.
Yes, we drive buses.
Yeah,
yes.
We drive buses. Yeah. Yeah. Which means at some point we both considered or tried homeschooling. Did you guys ever do that?
We did. Couldn't stand it.
Couldn't stand it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We're homeschool dropouts as well. That's what we call ourselves.
Okay.
But the big movie Unplanned that came out.
Right.
Was about your wife lived a life that they made into a movie that had to be rated R.
Yes.
Like, how cool is that to be like?
I almost insisted on it when they said we were going to make a movie about you. I was like, it should be rated R. Our life, especially then when she was working in Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry,
right.
Could not have been more rated R.
Right.
And even now, we're not a PG family. Neither are you guys, right? Like,
right.
Raising a family is not PG. Like everybody thinks, there's parental guidance, but because there's so many crazy things happening in a big family. And so, yeah, it was so much fun to have an R-rated movie.
Yeah. And so that's in addition to some of the different advocacy work that your wife does, it propelled you into your current job. So what is your full-time job?
I was a teacher for 5 years and then fell backwards into being a stay-at-home dad. And I don't say parent, because mom is mom and dad is dad, and I prefer to claim my fatherhood,
yep.
So I am stay-at-home dad. And that's what I've done now for, 10, 11 years, something like that. And it's been a joy. It's been a lot of fun, quite the adventure.
Yeah, so one of the reasons why your family isn't PG
mm-hmm.
is because your family doesn't try to be PC,
no.
Right? Politically correct or
not
whatever.
One bit, yeah.
And so in regards to it, from a societal standard, there's sometimes a tension there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh no, the dad should be the main provider and blah, 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 blah. But like your family has called you to a deeper mission.
Right.
And so tell us a little bit more about how did you and Abby come to the decision to be like, this is how we're going to best live out what the Johnsons were created to do.
Partially by accident, partially through prayer. I mean, it was, so whenever she left Planned Parenthood and started traveling for work, we only had one kiddo and, I was still teaching, so I was a special ed teacher at high school, and so I did that for another year, and then we decided, well, we need to move to the Austin area, because we were living in Bryan College Station, and so we came over to Austin, and I was burned out on teaching, and I was like, I just don't think I want to do this anymore, and so when it came time to apply for a job, I kind of just wasn't.
You didn't?
Yeah, and then so I was like, so what do you want to do? And I was like, well, she mentioned maybe it'd be better if you just stay home. And because Grace, our youngest, was starting school and we were going to start the homeschooling thing.
Right.
And kind of doing it in conjunction with another family, doing it with their family.
Okay.
And so they could kind of ease us into it. And so yeah, that makes sense. So we would do that. I'd take her back and forth, take her to dance, piano, all the things that kind of came with being a stay at home with one kid in homeschool. And it just worked out. It just kind of fit us. But there were some bumps. I mean, there's definitely some growing pains in doing that and figuring out what we expect from each other. Like, what do I expect from her when she's home? What does she expect from me being home all the time?
Right.
And so it just kind of developed. And then I tried to go back to work for a minute and I was like, this isn't working out.
It added chaos as opposed to.
Yeah, it didn't add anything except separation between me and my wife. It was just more time we weren't together. So
mm-hmm.
if she's traveling, when she comes home from a trip, we should be together as a family.
Yeah. You know? And that might be your weekend, but your weekend might take place on a Wednesday, Thursday.
Right.
Because there might be a speaking or a banquet that she goes to.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the actual. And so,
yeah.
And that's kind of the beauty of being a stay-at-home parent and having only one working. Like when that person is ready to go on vacation, hey, I got time, we can take a trip. The other person doesn't have to ask off from work.
Right.
Like you're at work already.
Yeah.
Like, and you are your boss, and you just say, "Yeah, let's pack up all our stuff and go." It's a wonderful convenience of this whole stay-at-home parenting gig, but I think more people should try it, but yeah.
What would that look like? Let's say that you're a husband, right? Uh-huh. Well, I know you're a husband, but
yes.
For our viewers, like there's a dad out there that's watching, his wife works, and they're eating take home food every other day. The house is a wreck and they've got a housekeeper coming. Like, what does it look like to go from the chaos of two working parents to, in all fairness, the chaos of having one working parent and one
two
parent.
Employed parents?
Yeah. Two employed, two W-2 parents.
You know, I try to explain to people, yes, being a stay-at-home parent is a job. And if you're a working parent, that doesn't make you any less of a parent. Like, we're still equal parents, right? The difference is your job is your break from your kids and your kids is your break from your job. So
right.
When you're a stay-at-home parent, you're with your kids all the time and there's like that. Imagine never having a weekend off or going anywhere from work. You love it. Just because I'm in a frustrated moment doesn't mean I'm not having the time of my life doing this.
Right.
Like, I may be red-faced, ready to punch holes in the wall, but I love it. You know, like, it's a wonderful, rewarding job in a sense. But
you didn't hesitate to say yes to come spend a couple hours with me recording either.
This is a nice little vacation. Especially with summertime, the kids at home and everything like that. So, but to answer your other question, like, what does that look like? You know, I had to figure out pretty quick. I couldn't just go to the movies in the middle of the day every day.
Right.
You couldn't. It's not all about scheduling time for yourself. You know, you're really in a job of service to your family. And so that includes cooking, includes cleaning. That also includes unclogging toilets, maintenance, all the stuff you'd expect to do just as being the man in the house.
Right.
And now you're probably doing it just at a different level, more often, with more awareness of it.
Right.
You know, because it's in your face all the time. And especially if your kids are home all the time, your toilets get clogged more often.
Right.
They eat more snacks. There's more trash on the ground.
Yeah.
Your backyard needs to be picked up more often, that sort of thing. And then when your kids are young, it may seem like, ugh, this is a horrible tunnel to be in. And it's rough.
It's very labor intensive.
Yes, because they're so much more dependent on you.
Yeah.
Then as your kid gets older and you're like, well, I can teach them to fold this laundry. I can teach them to mow the grass and then they can do
what's
it.
What's the magic age? Because I know that there's parents out there that have asked me the same, because I've got six kids. You've got?
Eight.
And so what is the magic age where all of a sudden they're no longer taxing, but they're more giving than they are taxing? When does it balance out?
I tell new parents when they're just having their first kid, I'm like, okay, it gets better every 3 months. But they're still dependent on you, right? So like they turn a corner about every 3 or so months.
Okay.
Like it works in threes. So like at 9 months when they're holding their own bottle, you're like, this is the greatest milestone ever.
Yeah, right? But the 6 months even, when they slept through the night that first time, you're like, I'm alive again.
You're not even thinking about them doing laundry or anything like that. So then fast forward, 5 is when I feel like, okay, I can take them to amusement parks and they can ride everything. They can probably buckle themselves in and out of a car.
Yeah.
And we can... if they run out the front door, I'm not quite as scared that they'll die without me.
Yeah.
And like, I can go camping with them. So I got to keep an eye on them, but I don't have to be touching them the whole time.
Right.
Like, I'm not deathly afraid that they're going to fall off a cliff, even if it's a completely flat area.
Yeah. Yeah.
They will find that one cliff somewhere in the campground. And so I'd say 5, that's a good turning point. And then that's kind of where I kind of start chores. Like, even if it's just like, pick up that pen while I pick up 20 other things.
Right.
Because it's going to be a problem. They're going to be like, I'm tired. I don't want to do that. I'm like,
it's a co-laborer.
Yes.
We're going to pick up toys, but you're going to pick up toy.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I've had to like take their hand, put the pen in their hand and then walk them with their arm all the way to where it goes. Put it in the thing for them.
Yeah. You can
have them let go. And they're screaming at me the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, as if I beating him with a switch, but I'm like, no, I'm just helping you put away your toy that you got out.
Yes.
Thanks.
For the younger viewers out there, when he says beating him with a switch, he means a Reed, not a Nintendo gaming console. Both would be just as effective.
Yes. Yeah. Funny switch, like, you know, our generation kind of came from, how old are you?
Yeah, I'm 41.
Okay, I'm 44. And so I barely caught on to that Gen X.
I'm 42. Oh my gosh, I'm old. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And so my buddy, he was a couple years older than me. His dad told him to go get a Switch, you know, because the punishment of getting a Switch, I never had to do this. I always got belts or whatever.
Yeah, I got the belt.
Yeah, okay. So the punishment of finding it, you had to find the weapon that your parent was going to punish you with.
Yep.
And so his dad told him to go get a Switch, and he went out and found the biggest log he could muster and get back to the house. His dad thought it was so funny. He got out of the out of the punishment. He's like, that you get this one pass.
My brother always got belted first. And so while he was getting belted in his room next door, I was in my room putting on four pairs of underwear.
Hey, man. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You got to do what you got
to
do.
But I always preferred the whipping to any kind of grounding because it was in and out.
There's instant resolution.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want it, but I preferred it.
Oh, and to not get punished. Like, you've just disappointed me. Well, what's my punishment? I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
No, no. Hit me, please. Mom, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Please. Yeah. I'm ready for it. So anyway, yeah, going back to the cleanup. And we've also taught our kids, we all live here as a team. Like, this is a team effort. We're a family. Like, we're taking care of each other. So cleaning up our spaces so we have a nice, clean home to live in, like, that doesn't just happen by magic. Like, you've been watching me clean up. Now it's time for you to do as you see me doing.
Right.
And really, like, okay, and you're learning these skills, like, as they get older. So in their teenage years, you're like, hey, I didn't clean up just so I wouldn't have to. One day you're going to go live in a house. I'm trying to raise good roommates, spouses. And if you go into religious life, roommates again.
Right.
You know, so like you have to take care of the common areas in your own space. Like, my daughter, who's 15 now, she couldn't figure out why she had roaches. It's like, because you keep bringing food in here and leaving it in here.
Yeah.
You're disgusting. That's why.
Yeah.
You're a teenager and you're gross. Like, I've told you, get your food out of here.
Yeah.
And now we've taken care of the cockroach thing. Ta-da. You know, so she got a lesson learned there.
Right.
That may be really gross to share with people, but like, that's going to happen in your home.
Yeah. And like, again, the perfect family doesn't exist.
No.
But the family that sees those imperfections and freaks out is probably not a healthy family.
No.
The one that sees it and says, there's roaches. Sweetheart, let's learn from this.
Yeah.
And let's move forward and let's give you ownership over it. Mm-hmm. Because there is something about the society that we live in. Like, you don't want your 5-year-old or your 4-year-old just running around in the street. Mm-mm. They don't know how to look for cars, right?
Right.
Now, if your 4-year-old is out there with your 15-year-old, you're set, because your 15-year-old would be like, car, and then they look for the youngest. They start to have this, and that's, I think, one of the beauty of the big family.
Yes,
is they start to watch out for each other. Mm-hmm. But man, we were nervous because you can't turn on the news without seeing some other kid that looks like yours get kidnapped.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, and that's scary. And then all of a sudden, we realize our kids are like, my oldest is 14.
Mm-hmm.
She's gonna be driving on her own in 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and we won't let her ride her bike to the 7-Eleven. And then 2 years after that, she'll be living on her own. Like, what, how do you, that's a challenge, I think, especially when, because now I'm working from home. And so I see so much of my kids and I'm in it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to think about, soon enough, they're going to be, have a roommate in a college dorm. And I don't know if the independence that I'm fostering now is enough to get them to that level.
I can see what you mean. Yeah. Just today we have a Denny's just around the block, far enough to drive, close enough to walk if you want to.
Sure.
Especially on a 102-degree day in Texas.
You're driving.
You drive, yeah. And so, and right next to it is a 7-Eleven, like a McDonald's and a coffee place, and across the street is an HEB. And my oldest is 15.
Yep.
And last year we let her start walking because we gave her a phone and a watch that we can track.
Okay.
And she goes with a friend. Almost never go, especially during the lockdowns, just looking for something to do. Just got to get out of the house. She's like, can I just go to the store and get some sweet tea?
Yeah.
Take a mask and a scooter, you know,
and a $10 bill.
Yeah. And then so it kind of started there, and she actually has her temporary, her learner's permit.
Oh yeah.
We haven't let her drive yet. She hasn't driven. I let her drive in the church parking lot about 100 yards, and it was awful.
Oh no.
Like, there was a lot of braking.
Okay.
I was like, she's not ready for the street.
Yeah.
So we need to go find a giant parking lot somewhere and just let her take laps and learn to brake and the driving pedal, the gas pedal. But anyway, so yeah, I was thinking that today. I was like, when I was a kid, starting in first, second grade, I would ride my bike around the block to the gas station that was there.
Yeah.
Like 7-Eleven or whatever it was, or Circle K or whatever, what was there. And we'd do it as friends. You'd go get, can't you do it 3 times a day?
No smartwatch, no cell phone.
No.
You just go.
Yeah. You'd stayed on the sidewalk. You watched for cars. There was bike trails all over the place.
Yeah.
And you just went on them. And yeah, there was worry of kids getting kidnapped then, but not quite like it is today.
Right.
And what's funny is, like, now we have all these documentaries out about kids that got kidnapped when we were young.
They got found?
No, they're like, their stories are being told
okay
more now. My wife's really into true crime.
Okay.
And so I've watched more Dateline than any man needs to watch.
But all of it can create a situation where you're terrified.
Yes.
To foster leaders. Because I don't want our, as Catholics, we're not called to just raise our children to be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
But rather instruments of transformation in society.
Right.
Which means there has to be a leadership component. So it's not just living in society, but also engaging society in order to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that we have to give a leash that's long enough for them to do that.
Yeah.
And that's scary when you're watching true crimes or Dateline. Like, it's terrifying.
It really is. Yes. Yeah. Yes, because it's like, I blinked and they were gone type stories.
Right.
Like, I literally, like, they went home to go to the bathroom and never made it home.
Yeah.
That kind of story. And so, they're really hard to watch. But I was thinking that as I was driving to Denny's, it's like, I got all these kids that are like kindergarten, first, second, third grade, mm-hmm. and I don't let them drive much or ride much more than around the block
right.
by themselves. And usually I like to go with them. And really, yes, it's good family time, but like you said, it does that foster independence. I'm always there for everything they do.
Right.
When are they going to start doing things on their own? And they do have a friend's house I let them walk to. And his parents, he lives with his grandparents. They walk him. Like, so they're extra protective of him, whereas I let mine walk all the way over there.
Right.
And it's really not even far. And then we also have another neighbor. She's like the grandmother of the neighborhood.
Yeah, we got one of those too.
And she walks her dog, so cool. And the kids always want to walk the dog with her.
I'm like,
yes, absolutely, you may go. And so I guess it's a little bit at a time, but then, I don't know about you, the most terrifying thing when you're out is when your kids decide to close and hide in the clothes. The big round thing that holds the clothes, like in Dillard's or JCPenney or something like that. And they want to hide in there.
Yep.
And then you're yelling for them and they don't want to, they don't want to be found.
Because they're playing a game, but you're playing, they're getting sex
trafficked. You're playing, as soon as I find you, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'll kill you.
Yes. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So this stay-at-home dad gig.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I mean, is there a better life for you that you can imagine than being where you're at?
No. I'm getting to the point though, like I said, 10, 11 years in, starting to pray for the next, what's the next stage? What's my,
how old's your youngest?
He just turned 3.
So once he gets to school age.
So we're going to probably have him 1 year at home, one more year.
Yeah.
And then he'll be 4 the next year and he'll probably go to pre-K 4.
And then that's a new chapter for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so then I have all the kids out. They'll all be in a private school together, all the kids.
Right.
And, so then I got to find out, do I want to go work at the school they're going to be at?
Right.
But I'll still be around them all the time. I don't know that I want to teach again. I don't want to do lesson plans or anything like that again, but
sure.
I like the idea of maybe coaching their teams.
Right.
And being a janitor during the day and coaching at night or something like that.
Sure.
Like, I'm definitely a manual labor kind of guy.
Okay.
I like to write, love doing this kind of interaction with you.
Yeah.
But if you were to ask me to go plan this out or the other, go work at a bank and be in charge of finances, you'd fire me pretty quick.
Okay.
Like, I would rather be outside hammering things, mowing grass. Forrest Gump had the perfect life, in my opinion. Go around just mowing everything. I was like, oh, it's wonderful. You're outside all the time. Smell of grass, smell of gasoline. I love that kind of stuff.
And the occasional ping pong.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just running into celebrities. You meet the president 5 or 6 times and you get a great life. But now, so I'm really trying to discern. And that's the big word of my life right now. The last 2 years is discernment. Yeah. That's the one I'm... means a lot to me. Like, if I could just tattoo it on my arm, discernment. That's the most important word in your vocabulary. It's just really trying to get it better than right. Like, you know.
Now, we're recording downtown Austin. We're not more than a block and a half away from a tattoo parlor anywhere we go.
Well, give me a minute. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just have to add it to the collection. But anyway, so just trying to figure out, is that what I'm supposed to do? Or am I supposed to go get a job? Samsung's moving into town. Should I go there?
Sure.
Or like, do I need to make enough money where Abby can stay at home more? Because Abby's the only breadwinner. She's primary breadwinner, but she's also doing what she's called to do. So it's not like she can never just stop doing what she's doing, because I don't want to face my maker and be like, oh yeah, I totally encourage my wife to stay at home, sit around and do nothing.
And that's it. I think that it's Abby's execution, but it's the Johnson's mission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so your role in that mission puts you in a place where being a stay at home dad is how you fulfill your family's mission and support your wife's calling. Right.
Yeah. See, it's, you know, if people know our story. So my wife worked for Planned Parenthood for 8 years, and then she saw an abortion sound or a ultrasound guided abortion. changed her heart. It's not like instantaneous, like some people, like the movie would show. She saw this abortion happen on screen and then, oh, like flipped the switch and she was done. No, it's like anything else, any other big change in your life, you know, you're going to go through like a phase. It's going to evolve a little bit.
Right.
It's got to grow and you got to think things through. Like you got to, like she came home and she's like, tell me what happened. She's like, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do with this. Like that was like, she hands in the air, like, please tell me.
And she sets it on you.
Yeah. She's like, please, like she's telling me what she saw. And she's like, I don't even know to be sad or to be indifferent or to look at it like, it, oh, it's just the science of abortion or what? And like all of the above, what do I do with this?
Yeah.
And so, and then so little by little that changes. And then when she decides to quit, she was going to go get like go into nursing school or run another clinic that doesn't do abortions, just kind of get out of the industry and move on with our lives.
Right.
And then Planned Parenthood decides to sue her and put a gag order on her between her and 40 Days for Life. They didn't want Abby talking about what she saw in the abortion clinics with anyone.
Right.
But they went to the media saying, we don't want her to talk. So the media's like,
let's go talk to Abby.
Yeah. What did she see? And so we get the gag order taken care of in court. And
was that with Paradowski?
Yes.
That was
an amazingly fun day.
That was a great scene. I felt like they captured.
Yeah. They got him down. He was probably the best casting.
Really?
They did for the whole movie. Yeah. Him and I think the guy that played me did really well.
I got to be the youth minister to his kids for the season.
Oh, really?
I was doing youth ministry down there. So, yeah. Jeff Paradowski and
great guy.
Team. Yeah,
and awesome. That's his actual phone number in the movie.
Is that right?
On the billboard.
I was down in Bryan the other day and I saw him on a poster or billboard. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, no, why wouldn't I want advertising in a movie that millions of people are going to see?
For sure.
Yeah. So anyway, so, and then after that, so 700 Club calls, former Arkansas governor. No, was he governor? His daughter's governor now. His daughter was... press secretary for anyway. He had a great show going on at the time.
So okay.
Abby goes on his show.
Yep.
And she keeps going on the news. And then next thing you know, she has an agent. She's booking for all these speaking gigs. Everybody wants her to talk. And it just kind of swept us up. And so, again, like a friend of mine said it best, it was well after I'd been in the stay at home thing, is like, I couldn't let my ego and my pride of like, no, I'm the man, I got to do this, get in the way of like what God is calling her to do. And so when she goes out there and does this thing and then it's my job to stay home. And like I said, it wasn't like it was a perfect fit right at the beginning. Like we had to like talk to each other about expectations. Like she comes home, she'd expect these things should be done at the house. And like, if I call you and I need you to run this errand, I need you to be available to run this errand.
Right.
And when she comes home, I need her to clock out. Like,
yeah.
I need you to put the phone down. I need you, like, it's not like you're on an airplane or in a hotel room anymore. You're sitting at home with me and your daughter. You need to spend quality time
family.
With us. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta work on available. And she's written on about that on a couple of her books. Like, that's taken some time. There's been a lot of push and pull there. And, you know, we've gone through our peaks and valleys and, like, good months and bad months. And there's some months where, like, when the movie came out, she was home maybe 6 or 7 days. And that's combining half days.
Yeah. I remember you telling me about that.
And that was a really hard time.
Yeah.
And so, and then there was me getting like, you got to be careful not to get bored. You got to make sure you're finding stuff to do. And by stuff to do, I mean the laundry or go out with your friends.
Yeah.
Or anything. Because that's really kind of, I know we'll get into it later, but I got really deep into drinking. The alcohol just snuck in and took over. And especially one of the darkest times whenever the movie came out. And she went out and she was getting all this attention. I was a little jealous of the attention she got.
Well, and you were isolated because your bride was gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was home with 7 kids at the time. She was pregnant with number 8.
Uh-huh.
And they're all little. Half of them are in diapers. And I'm like, she's out there doing these glamorous interviews. And trust me, it wasn't glamorous. And I'm stuck at home. I wasn't stuck. Like,
right,
I
right.
was happy to be there.
You were called. Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, dang it. I want to go on some trips. I want to do an interview with Lloyd, you know, on Catholic radio and stuff like that, which I did get to go do. But she's like, I'm so sick of hearing my own story. Like, she's, I'm so tired of talking.
I'll tell it.
I was like,
please, sweetie.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, oh, I'll do it. And the truth is, she's just good at it. She was built for it. She's like, she has that thick skin. She's quick on her feet, you know, she can come up with an answer really fast and it's honest and genuine. Not that I'm not that way.
But she's also joyful
yes.
in the midst of it too. There's something about the way that your wife speaks, mm-hmm. even about a difficult topic like abortion, mm-hmm. that has an air of hope to
yes.
it.
Yeah.
That our world desperately needs hope. And hope in the midst of the abortion industry is so profound.
Like, well, why shouldn't she be happy and joyful to do that job?
Right.
You know, and she's also making up for being on the other side of the fence for so long.
Sure.
Taking life for so long. And so, and then I kind of had to realize that the reason I'm in the stay-at-home dad gig and she's in the public eye gig is because my story isn't meant for that. The story I tell, it's meant for this one-on-one.
Right.
Face-to-face, typing it out on Facebook. Putting out a quick post, putting out as much genuine, honest, clean, dirty, whatever it is at the time.
You Real, know? Authentic.
Yeah, authentic. Yeah. Like putting it out there for people to see, like sharing my story as a stay-at-home dad, and now I'm a year and four, 2 months sober.
Yes.
Like, people want to hear that. Putting out there that, yeah, I watch R-rated movies when my kids go to bed, and I watch Toy Story 20 times over while they're awake. You know?
Yes.
Like, I'm not as scared to use a screen to babysit my children. I'm loud and proud that, yeah, sometimes that happens.
Sure.
And then we make up for it by going camping once a month. And then,
yep.
Like, yes, we take as many trips as we can. I know some people can't do that, but I'm not going to not do that because you can't do that.
Right.
If that makes sense, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm not going to tone down or censor my life and my joy for someone else's.
You're not going to play your hand with someone else's cards.
No.
You're going to play your hand with your cards. Yeah.
And understand, I was once there. We've been on WIC.
Yeah.
We've been on government support and we've worked our way up from that.
Yep.
And we have struggled. We've gone without electricity. We lived in a house where the windows were not sealed. You could hear the first house Abby and I lived in. When the wind blew, you could hear the wind blowing, whistling through the windows.
Wow.
And we had like indoor outdoor carpeting with no padding underneath it. And there were rats living in our house. The next house we lived in, it was the only house in Texas with a basement. And the sewage line for the neighborhood ran next to that basement. And a tree broke both the concrete wall of our basement and that sewage line. So we had poo floating underneath our house.
Cesspool house.
Yes, for like a month before we found it.
Wow.
And we had like goo growing up the sides of the walls.
Oh my gosh.
And that was the house we brought our first child home to. So, I mean—
Nice.
Yeah, we got our horror stories too, and we have lived in squalor, but then we've moved our way up here, and it's through hard work and concentration, love of family.
But you know? But I honestly think that that analogy of just poo crawling up the walls.
Yes.
Right. There's a moment when you're a young father or a father of young people, mm-hmm. right? Especially if you have more than one in diapers, where just you just get overwhelmed by that reality.
Yes.
But when you're a stay-at-home dad, like that's it. There is no one else to be like, here, uh-huh. right?
Yeah.
You're like, this is what I get to deal with. And I think that there is there's aspects of grit in fatherhood.
Yes.
That I think you get to live out more because of your station as a stay-at-home dad.
Mm-hmm.
That other fathers need to learn and embrace more. Because like I said over lunch today, like, I believe that Catholic fatherhood can transform the world, not just transform our kids into saints, but actually transform the world. I think our role of embracing what it means to be truly father, it's a bigger deal. It's on an eschatological level. It's on a salvation level, not just on a societal level.
I think, and I've said this when the moments I do get to speak publicly, people ask me, as a man, what's the father's role in bringing down abortion numbers? And I'm like, sticking around. Like, letting women, like, be committed. Commit to someone.
Yeah.
Like,
fiercely.
Yes. Like, letting a woman, if you're going to jump in bed with a woman, she needs to know that the consequence, like, you're there for it. Not just for, like, what we've done in society is separate procreation from orgasms and intimacy.
Right.
And I feel like you need all three.
Right.
For sex to be valid. You know, even speaking to a non-Christian or a non-Catholic, like, I would tell you, like, you need to have all three of these. If you want to have the best sex of your life, you need to have
at least openness to all three.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Like, you have to be open to life, intimacy, and orgasm. Because if you're not open to life, you're really open to death and heartbreak.
Right.
Like, you're doing these selfish things, and they wouldn't be so. And I just feel like you need all three to give your whole self to someone and accept that whole person back
right.
to yourself.
Right. Yeah.
And so, and we talk about it all the time. Oh, I'm giving myself willingly. No, you're getting off. That's what you're doing.
Right, right.
Like, you're here for a transactional sexual encounter, and that's it. and like there's no substance to that. And so I feel like, and that's how we end up with abortion, divorce, fatherlessness, all these things running around.
Which leads to things like poverty.
Yes.
Crime.
Right.
Brokenness. Yeah.
And so I would say like, I talked about one time, I should do a TED talk on how to respond to your wife, girlfriend, partner, whoever, when they come to you with that pregnancy, that positive pregnancy stick.
Yeah.
And say, I'm pregnant. And they're probably terrified because they don't know how you're going to respond. Well, before you had sex, they should have known how you would respond.
Right.
That should have been talked about beforehand.
Right.
And they shouldn't. And even if they're still terrified knowing how you'd respond, because they're like, oh my gosh, especially if they've never been pregnant before. Like, and we've had practice with this after several kids, you kind of learn how to respond.
Yes.
Right. But I feel like we as fathers, stay-at-home dads, Catholic dads, all the dads, like I get this much time with my kids. I should be teaching my kids on the first go, you can't get this wrong. The first time your person, your wife, or if you are the wife, like I got three daughters, one day they're going to walk up to a man and say, I'm pregnant. Like you need to have these conversations with him to know he's with you if you do get pregnant.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So big things to talk about.
It's a whatever it takes type of response. So mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. So we're about to close out this episode.
Okay.
Last closing thought to all the Catholic dads out there, especially those that are maybe thinking, maybe my wife could be stay at home, or maybe I could be stay at home. Like if there is a stay at home Doug type of phrase or encouragement that you would want to share with our viewers, what would be something you'd want to share with them?
I think everybody should try it for a year. I think everybody should give it a go, especially after what just happened with the stay at home COVID lockdowns and all that good stuff. Like some of you got a taste of it already. And so maybe see what cooking 5 out of 7 nights of the week, like most of your meals would look like.
Yep.
if you aren't already. See what the laundry and the household chores. And I don't know about you, but I was raised, there are no boy chores or girl chores.
Nope.
There's household chores. There's family chores.
Yep.
I mowed the grass just as much as I vacuumed the house.
Okay. You know,
and there was no gender anything injected.
We have ownership in our household. So the lawn is mine. I own that.
That's because, again, you're in here recording with me because you're getting a break.
I mean,
mowing the grass was my quiet time. Like I said,
I love it. Yeah. Yes. I put the headphones on and a nice podcast. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but everything else we all learned to do together.
Right.
And so I would say give it a year, like, and see what it does to your kids, how it transforms their behavior. Just you being present all the time, picking them up and dropping them off for school. That trip.
The car time is amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's studies done on the pickup, especially picking your kid up from school. That time after school when you pick them up is quite possibly the most important time for them to like go over what they did in school, just talking to them. It's almost up there with like sitting around the table for dinner.
Right.
You know, and so I think you'll see when you're home all the time with them like that, if you don't catch dinner together, it's okay. You know,
quantity time leads to quality time.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have so many more opportunities for all this quality time. And I think, say the person that is going out to work comes home, hopefully to a chaotic home, and learns empathy towards that other parent.
Sure.
Being like, okay, I see what you're doing and I need to help out. Like just because I was gone working doesn't mean I don't have to do the dishes. And it's everybody like you step in, you help, you take that first step and taking care of your family as best you can. And like, if that's included in it, that's included in it.
Yep.
And so I really think more families ought to try it. If you don't like it, I mean, as I understand, there's lots of jobs available these days.
Cash out after a year. Yep.
That's
you can
right.
do it. Yep.
Go back to work if you want to. I plan on going back to work in some way after 10, 11 years, but.
We did the math.
Mm-hmm.
And it was maybe $800 a month difference.
Right.
Like, because after you calculate all the other things that mm-hmm. are involved, the meals out, the different pieces, the someone to come help clean the home because we're not getting it done, and the chaos that goes along with it. I'm like, it's not worth that extra $800. You know what I mean?
No.
So yeah.
It's no, I would pay $800 to not
have that chaos.
Yes.
Yeah.
To just have the peace in my home. And that's really, honestly, I think if you try stay-at-home parenting, that is your goal. You were looking for peace in your home.
Yeah.
You're trying to build that foundation for peace and for learning and teaching about discernment. And really just molding your family.
If my wife makes more money, be humble enough to say, I'll try the stay-at-home side of things.
Yeah, and then she can buy you nice things.
I love it. Hey guys, we want you to like and subscribe. We want you to share this with someone. We also want to invite you back. We've got a couple more episodes with Doug on tap. We're going to talk about the pro-life piece. We're going to talk about his sobriety, his journey to sobriety, and we're going to dive into some pretty amazing things. Doug, if they wanted to follow you like I do on social media, you are aghast just to see some of your comments, your quips, and also your insights. So what would they do to find or follow Doug?
They're all Facebook. Twitter's a cesspool, but I'm on it anyway. And then Instagram, they're all Doug on Tap.
Doug on Tap.
All one word, most of the time.
Great. Hey, here at the Catholic Dad Show, we believe that Catholic fatherhood can, will, and is changing the world. So go out there and live it in whatever way you can. Thanks again, Doug, for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Appreciate it.